Ghost Stories Online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see, I did it written in paint, where you just painted.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. And today, your calls at 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost stories with us. We would love to hear them. Of course, you can also write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. Lots of ways to get your stories to us. You can also email if you'd like to send your stories that way. You can email your audio file, your MP4, whatever, direct to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at realghoststoriesonline.com. We have a little guest that just walked in as soon as we started doing the show.
She smells like peanut butter.
Did you eat peanut butter? The peanut butter monster come by? Yeah, you got to talk to the microphone over there. Want to say hi?
Hi.
You've become quite popular, Harper. Lots of people think you're adorable, and they love to hear from you. Mm-hmm. You just had a birthday the other day. What did you get for your birthday? Talking to the microphone, honey.
A jump.
A jump jump? Oh, my gosh. What else did you get? Anything else?
I got a pink thing that where you draw on it with paper and pencils and markers.
Oh, really? What are you drawing pictures of?
I don't know.
Graveyards?
No.
Zombies?
No.
What are you going to be for Halloween?
A zombie.
Okay. There's nothing cuter than a little red-headed zombie. All right, Harper. Thank you for coming in and saying hi. We're now all aware of what you will be for Halloween. And happy birthday. A day after your birthday. All right, let's go to our first caller today at 855-853-4802. This is Josh in Kentucky. Hi, Josh. Let's hear your story.
Hey, guys. My name is Josh. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky. Originally I'm from Bardstown, Kentucky, the bourbon capital of the world. It's a town about 45 minutes south of Louisville, the home of the Kentucky Derby. But anyway, I have a couple of stories I wanted to share with you guys. One main one, mostly. I have a few other ones. Growing up in Bardstown, Kentucky, like I said, the bourbon capital of the world, but also one of the more haunted towns in America. Travel Channel has actually listed it, I think, as the 17th most haunted small town in America, which may not amount to anything, but hey, we're proud of it. A lot of tourists like to check out all the haunted places down there. Anyway, to kind of get to the story, my family owns a lot of land in Bardstown, on a large farm there. My grandparents bought the house, the farmhouse that was built in 1845. They bought it in 1952, I want to say. So the house has changed a lot of hands over the years. So there's a lot of history, a lot of cool stories that we've kind of gathered over the years. But one in particular really kind of got attention to the family. Now, most of my family aren't really believers. I am. My mom is. Most of my siblings are. But everyone else, and a couple uncles are, pretty much, you know, hit or miss. Like, maybe they believe in something, maybe not. So it's just kind of up in the air. But this one story in particular is important to note, that my uncle was a firm believer in something going on. So anyway, this house, my grandpa's house, was built in 1845. It was used as a neutral field hospital during the Civil War, among other things. And during the Great Depression, we did find out that it was used as a sort of a board and breakfast. They had a traveler's room that was added on into the overall structure of the house. So, because back then, you know, there was a lot of space in between homes, you know, a few miles. And if you're passing through on your way to St. Louis or Chicago, you needed somewhere to stay for the night. And wasn't anywhere near some sort of motor pool or hotel or anything like that. You could stay with the family, do chores, eat dinner, leave first thing in the morning for, you know, a modest fee. Anyway, so my grandpa's house, the traveler's room is at the top floor. And the way it's designed is that there's two doors that keep it closed from either side, so that whoever stays in the traveler room can be bothered from the guests or from the owners of the house, and the owners of the house can be bothered by the traveler's room, just a security measure. So the story goes, I was a junior in high school. I'm 30 now, so about 12 years ago or so. I was visiting my grandfather. My grandmother had just passed away. My grandfather was developing Alzheimer's, so we all used to spend a lot of time with him, just to kind of help keep his mind as healthy as we could. It was myself, my dad, my two brothers, and my two sisters. We were all staying the night. And, of course, it's an old, creepy house. It always gave me the heebie-jeebies as a kid anyway. And we just kind of, you know, we were just there for our grandfather. Everyone's asleep. And I'm downstairs in the kitchen, which is right beneath the traveler's room, watching TV, playing, I don't know, Game Boy or reading or something, doing something. And I go to bed probably around 1 o'clock. So upstairs, you go up the stairs in the kitchen, up directly into the traveler's room. My brothers are sleeping, and we all share a king-size bed. At the time, my brothers were 5 and 7. And so I lay down in between them. Both of them are asleep at the time. And I had no prior knowledge to this room before this night. No clue. I didn't know what it was. All I knew is that it was a weird room that I never felt comfortable in. So I'm laying down, I'm trying to go to sleep, and it's in the middle of summer. Well, towards the end of summer, it's in August, and in the Ohio Valley, August is one of the hotter months. Definitely humid. Feels like a jungle out here. So anyway, I'm trying to get comfortable, try to go to sleep. There's a window air conditioned unit, but it's not really doing much of anything. And, burning up, and all of a sudden I notice that it gets freezing cold in the room. And when I say freezing cold, I mean like middle of winter ice storm freezing cold. Like, we need to have several comforters cold. So I crawl under the sheets, thinking that, just, you know, it's the air conditioning finally working. And I'm trying to go to sleep, and all of a sudden I realize that I'm having a hard time breathing, and it feels like there's something on top of me. And I understand that, you know, at the time I didn't, but I understand there's such a thing as sleep paralysis. But this was much different. I was not asleep. I never fell asleep. I never even closed my eyes. I was just kind of laying there, and I started smelling what smelled like rotten meat, something that had been sitting out in the sun for a long time. And on the corner on the ceiling, probably about 5-6 feet away from me, on the opposite side of the room, there's a dark spot that started growing across the ceiling. And I grew, and it grew, and it grew, and I just sat there and watched it. And I remember freaking out because, you know, it looked like maybe there was something leaking from the roof. So I try to wake up my brothers so that I can get them out of the bed, and we can go to my dad's room and figure out what was going on down the hall. But they didn't wake up. No one was waking up. I was shaking them and shaking them. No waking up. And it was getting colder to the point where I could see my breath just a little bit, or at least I imagined I did. And the smell got worse and worse, and the covers got heavier and heavier, almost like there was something kneeling over top of me. And all of a sudden, just as it all started, it stopped, and I was able to sit back up. And I looked over, and the spot was gone, or it was starting to retreat back in. So I get up, and I run into Dad's room. And normally, at this point in my life, I was a rebellious teenager, not a wimpy little kid. So I was kind of embarrassed, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So I ran into my dad's room, woke him up, told him what was going on. And now my dad is one of the non-believers. He doesn't really believe in much of anything. I mean, he believes that something exists. He believes in God, but he doesn't necessarily believe in the existence of ghosts or spirits or any of that nature. He just says, you know, classic Irish Catholic. It's complicated, but anyway, so I woke him up expecting him to tell me, you know, I was just a dream or I had sleep paralysis, whatever the case may be. But instead of brushing me off, I tell him what happened, and he tells me that I have to go and wake up my brothers and we have to sleep in his room for safety, which freaked me out. So I went in there, and I was able to eventually wake up my brothers, and we went to like my dad's bedroom, old bedroom down the hall, and everything was fine. The next morning, we're eating breakfast with my uncle, which is an important part that I mentioned at the beginning of this long story. We're eating breakfast with he heard that I had met the traveling cells, and of course I had no idea what he was talking about. So I asked him to kind of explain himself. He says that during the Great Depression, the family that owned the house at that time had a journal, and they had a visitor come through on his way to Chicago, traveling east, or rather west, and he was on his way to meet his wife and daughter. So he's just on his little buggy, and he stopped at this house, Culpeper Farms, for, you know, for the night or whatever, and it seemed very pleasant, very nice, very polite, very helpful, helped make dinner, helped clean up, helped do the dishes, you know, sat out on the porch with the patriarch of the family and had a glass of tea, I don't know, whatever they had, and went to bed. And then in the middle of the night, according to this journal, one of the daughters heard crying in the room, followed by a loud gunshot. So, long story short, when they're finally able to get in there, they found that the man had blown his, had put a shotgun in his mouth and then committed suicide. And on his body, they found a letter to his wife. She had left him during the Great Depression as he was a banker. And packed up and moved back out to her parents in Chicago, and he was on his way to see them, but he apparently didn't have the gumption to make it all the way, unfortunately. So, very sad story, but it's one that kind of adds up. I realized that the stain that I saw looked spreading across the ceiling, and my uncle went on to tell me that throughout his childhood, he slept in that room, and he often was visited by the traveling banker. Very, very spooky stuff. He's told me many, many other stories about it. And, of course, growing up in Bardstown, I've experienced tons and tons of other stuff as well, which I'll be more than happy to call back and tell you guys about. I just wanted to share that with you guys. I discovered the podcast today, actually. Today's August. August 9th, 2016, just found it today. I'm loving it. I'm going to become a member and support you guys because I love what you guys do. You guys are great together. You're great hosts. I look forward to hopefully hearing my story on the show in the near future. You guys have a great rest of your day, and take care.
That's someone who's getting active really quick.
Yeah.
We don't often have the just fine just today. I'm becoming EPP, calling in my story, doing it great. Welcome, yeah. And thank you.
Yes.
As far as the story goes, that's really interesting that they were able to get that much information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times, you know, people don't have, you know, any clue as to what would have happened in a home where these things are happening, especially if it goes way back, you know, that many years. But to be able to narrow it down that much.
Sure.
Is that something? If you were in that situation, would you want that much information?
I don't think so.
Would you want to know all of that story, or would you rather just kind of feel like, there's something here, I don't know what the hell it is?
I think I would just be like, if I can't feel it, then I'm okay.
But what if you could feel it? What if you could feel it, you were aware it was there, but you didn't know what it was? Does it bring any comfort to know what it likely is, or what the source of it likely
no,
is.
No, just because of the nature of what happened, it's
sure.
Just so disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be able to use that room for anything.
So you'd rather just kind of be like, nope, There's something there, I think.
There's something here, but I don't. Yeah. I don't know that I need to know or want to know the details, literally gory details.
Yeah, that's true. And there was quite a few there. So thank you for that call, and thanks for becoming an APP. Welcome to enjoying the show. You have entered at just the right season.
Yes.
Because this is where we start to get a lot of really, really good stories. And we do all year, but, you know, obviously Halloween season starts to bring out the best of even the folks who don't listen to ghost stories all mm-hmm. year long. So we got some exciting months up ahead. What is this? Juliana?
I think so.
Is calling in. Hi.
Hi there. My name is Juliana, and I just started listening to the podcast probably a couple weeks ago. I've had several ghost incidences happen, or spirit, I guess, incidences happen around me from different living situations. I'll maybe talk about the first big one that happened. I was living at home still with my family, big Italian family, so I had two sisters and my mother and father and my dog. So there was always five of us, and then each of us had boyfriends, so there would sometimes be seven of us, and our grandparents would come by, so there would be nine of us, and then 11 of us. So our house was very rarely empty, so when we got to have the house empty for an hour or two, it was kind of like a rare treat, and I was looking forward to actually just doing some chores without anybody around. It was really nice. And I had just started doing some dishes in our kitchen, and there was this one really big glass container that you would normally put leftovers in, but it's advertised to be one of the strongest containers you would ever own. Like, you can drop it, and it, you can heat it, and it won't crack, and you can freeze it. It's supposed to be one of those indestructible containers. And after the dishwasher had been full, there's, you know, pots and pans, and then this one big glass container. And I realized I had run out of room for things to dry, so I put this glass container on the base of the sink, and then once everything else was dry, I was going to flip it over and let it dry on the counter afterwards. So then I go into the other room, and I start folding some laundry and watching some really bad television, and our stereo turns on by itself, and our stereo is just below our TV, so I had to go up to the TV and turn off the stereo, and I thought it was maybe, you know, just like a power surge or something, and it just turned it on. So then I sit back down. Then as soon as I sit on the couch, it turns on again. And I have to go up to the TV again and turn it off, and I, like, check the plugs at the back to make sure it's not loose. And things turn on and off, and everything seemed secure, and so I turned it off, and I sat down. And then I heard this big crash coming from the kitchen. So I run in there, and the glass container that I had let sit on a flat surface looked like it had been thrown from a very high distance, like a very high height, and there was tiny little pieces of glass everywhere. It was like confetti there. It was all over the place, kind of like what happens when your windshield breaks. It was just tiny little pieces of glass everywhere, and I was home alone. Like, there was no one there, and I had, like, I was positive I had left this glass thing on the flat surface, and it was one of the scariest things I think that could have happened, because right after I had finished cleaning the glass, the stereo in the other room turned on again. So by that point, I called my mom, and I was like, you need to come home. I can't deal with this right now. And I told her what happened, and my mom is very very spiritual. She's very religious, and she believes that spirits can come and go all the time. And I don't know what happened that made the spirit or whatever it was so angry, but it was a very shocking experience. Recently, actually, I just had another experience. I moved out into a condo with my fiancé, and in our basement, we have an unfinished basement, which is where I've made my painting studio. And I was just painting down there by myself. I was listening to a comedy podcast, because we don't get a lot of reception, so Wi-Fi is kind of our main focus, I guess, for entertainment. And I'm leaning over, cleaning my palette, and I feel a hand on my shoulder, and it sounds like someone's whispering in my ear, and I turn around, and there's nobody there. And I just, I don't know, my heart started beating really fast. I didn't know what to do. I just felt like I wasn't alone. So I immediately just finished cleaning up my brush, and I put on some really loud television to kind of make myself feel like there was someone home until my partner got back to the condo. Yeah, and I guess one other quick story, I guess, is because our family is Roman Catholic, so we believe in spirits and angels and ghosts and all of that stuff. My aunt passed away last year, and my mother and my grandparents went to a medium to, I guess, see if she was okay. It was very sudden. She had an aneurysm and passed within 7 hours. So it was very, I think they just kind of needed some closure. And the medium said that anytime she's around or she wants us to feel her, she'll leave a dime around. And then as soon as she said that, we've been finding dimes everywhere. Like, they're all, and in places that you wouldn't even think a dime would be, like, not just on the floor, like, where you would maybe drop it, but, like, on the counter or by a picture frame or by a windowsill or by your plant. And it's, like, it's just the amount of dimes that we have. So my mom started collecting all the dimes that she thinks my aunt has left for her, and her whole windowsill is full of them. Anyway, so those are my stories. I have a few more, but I'll call back. Really love the show. You guys are great. Please keep up what you're doing. I listen to it all the time. I listen to it in the car on the way to work and on the car on the way back from work. I listen to it when I'm getting ready. I listen to it all the time. You guys are great. I think once we get a little more settled in this condo, I'll be an EPP and participate with you guys, because you're just so great. Please keep it up, and thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Your nachos are ready.
Yeah, sounded like the microwave. That was funny. Oh, man. You know, I've had so many of those types of dishes that she's talking about, and you can literally take them from the freezer with frozen food and stick them in a hot oven, and they won't shatter. So I don't know what kind of energy would have to be present to shatter those.
It takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Yeah, well, they last forever. You see them in antique stores.
Yeah.
They're really, really indestructible.
It's one of those things where you look at that, and that's just the thing. It kind of takes the chance of writing it off as some sort of atmospheric change, which you would with hot to cold, you know that?
Sure.
Like, I'm sensitive of that, you know, when I take a hot glass that's just been out of the dishwasher on the steam cycle, and I realize I probably shouldn't just put cold ice in here right now, or I'm going to have a glass shattering in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And some things can do that, but you're right, those dishes that she's talking about, no.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want, and it's like a rock.
It's like something was mad, like really mad.
What it would take, the force and energy it would take to do that, is quite extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost scary in itself, thinking of what could possibly do that. So thank you for the story, and hopefully you can become an EPP fairly soon and get to enjoy all the other stories that we have on those episodes. They are some of the best. If you like this show, you will certainly love the EPP episodes of the show, now up to like 100-something. So check that out. Let's go to Holly in Wyoming and hear your ghost story. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Tony and Jenny. My name is Holly. I am from Wyoming. And my story comes from my mom. It actually happened to a couple of her cousins. And we've always loved ghost stories and horror movies, things like that. And so when I was fairly young, my mom would tell this story to my friends and I, and just to this day, it just sends chills down my spine. Even now, you know, just getting ready to talk about it, I'm home alone and it's making me nervous. But anyway, let me set the scene. So this is back in the 80s. We'll just call my mom's cousins Bonnie and Joni. They're about 16, 17 years old at the time, living at home with mom and dad, just the four of them. Their parents were very well-off people. They had a lot of money, and their home was very large, probably over 5,000 square feet. And I think that I do need to mention also that this family has never believed in anything paranormal. They don't believe in God, the devil, spirits, anything. And to each their own, but I do feel it's relevant to the story. And so the fact that before they bought the house, a murder had actually occurred there, it didn't bother them at all. And I don't know if that has any impact on the story, but I kind of feel it does. So anyway, Bonnie and Joni are home alone. Their parents are out on a business trip or something. It's the weekend, you know, they want to have some friends over. And so it's late at night, and there's probably about 10 of them down in the basement. And this basement is very, very large. You know, it's a big house, and their parents liked to have get-togethers down in this basement. So there was a large bar spanning the long wall, and then behind that was a mirror. And so they're down there drinking beers, you know, hanging out, and at some point somebody, you know, brings out a Ouija board, and they all sit down around it, and initially they're asking it kind of silly questions, you know, does so-and-so like so-and-so and things like that. But then they start to ask it more questions about the house. And the back part of the room was actually a big storage room, and they had the door open to that for whatever reason. And they start to hear every now and then just whispers coming out of that room, and they can't make out what they're saying, but there are whispers coming out of this room. And you know, they kind of start to get a little bit more quiet. It gets, you know, the feeling changes in the room. They all kind of start to think like, oh, you know, what, maybe this is real or something, you know. And one of the boys, he starts to get really nervous, and the kids start to poke fun at him a little bit. And at that point, somebody decides to ask the Ouija board, an actual presence here, give us a sign. And it's quiet, and all of a sudden, that mirror just cracks right down the middle. And that boy that was getting nervous, he instantly just like stands up and is like, this is bullshit, you guys are messing with me, I'm getting out of here, you know, this is ridiculous. So he starts to make a beeline for the stairs, and you know, the stairs, the door is at the very top of the stairs. So he hits the first two steps, and it's just like, bam, he hit a wall, and he falls back. And some of the kids run over to him, and they're like, oh my gosh, are you okay? And he is just panic stricken, like, whoa, what the hell just happened? And I mean, it just didn't make sense. The door was at the top of the stairs, but something had prevented him from going up the stairs. So, you know, by this point, the kids are scared, and they decide to call it a night. The kids leave, go home, and Bonnie and Joni put the Ouija board away, and, you know, they go to bed. And so a couple nights later, Mom and Dad are home from their business trip by now, and it's middle of the night, and Mom wakes up all of a sudden. And she is just drenched in sweat. She's hot. So she gets out of bed and goes into the hallway and looks at the thermostat. And it is turned up to 100 degrees. And so she's instantly, like, pissed and goes into Joni and Bonnie's separate bedrooms and wakes them up and is like, you guys, you cannot be doing stuff like this. This is ridiculous. And Bonnie and Joni are like, me, you know, it was Bonnie, you know, it was Joni, and, you know, swore up and down that it wasn't them. Well, this actually continued to happen every night for the next week or so. Mom would wake up drenched in sweat, goes out, and the thermostat is turned up to 100 degrees. And just the entire time, the girls both swore that neither of them did it. They, you know, would blame the other one. Well, a couple of nights later, Bonnie is getting ready for bed. She goes into her room, lays down, turns the light off. You know, she pulls the covers up and she's sprawled out, has her leg hanging out of the bed, and she's closed her eyes, getting ready to drift off into sleep. And all of a sudden, something grabs her ankle. So she sits straight up in bed, and her first thought is Joni. So she starts screaming, "Joni, Joni, let go of me, you know, you bitch, this is stupid, get out of here." Well, she starts to feel nails digging into her ankle, and it hurts at this point. And so she really starts to freak out. And I mean, this only spanned a couple of seconds. It didn't last very long, but it lets go. So she jumps out of bed, just red in the face, mad, looks under the bed, and there's nothing there. So she is determined to find Joni and goes into Joni's room, and Joni's not there. The bed is made, lights off, nobody's there. She realizes, oh my gosh, Joni is over at a sleepover and my parents aren't home. They're off on a business trip or wherever. So she's scared. She gets a gun and goes through this huge 5,000 foot house, square foot house, and is searching every nook and cranny, closets, underneath all the beds. And she realizes she is completely alone. And she goes to go back to her room and goes in her doorway, and the Ouija board is sitting on her bed. And that's the end of the story. Whenever my mom would tell me that, I was like, so what happened? Like, did they believe in this stuff after that? You know, did anything else scary happen? And my mom would just tell me, you know, like, you know, not that I know, not that I know of. They just kind of went on with their lives, and they told me this story themselves and just kind of left it at that. And so I don't know if anything else happened to these girls or the other kids that played with the Ouija board, but that story has just always stuck with me, and I sure as shit do not sleep with my foot out of the bed, ever. And I never have played with a Ouija board either. I fully believe in evil spirits and the hereafter and everything like that. So anyway, I love your guys' show. I listen to it all the time. And I hope to hear my story. So thanks, guys. Bye.
I think it's funny how one good story can completely change the way you view everything, because mm-hmm. you talked about how her family was really not believing in any of that.
Sure.
And then hearing what happened, that changed what she believes in and how she sleeps. And obviously she's not going to play with a Ouija board probably even before listening to our show.
Mm-hmm. It just takes like one convincing story.
Uh-huh.
And it probably needs to come from someone you trust. I mean, in this case, you know, the way it was, the dynamic there. But, yeah, I mean, it's either sometimes the experience or who the story comes from.
Yeah.
That can change all that. I think it's funny sometimes, and I don't blame her at all for the whole, I don't sleep with my leg off the bed or anything like that. I mean, I always felt like that, too, when I was little. Mm-hmm. And I still do somewhat. I don't like to have my feet hanging off the edges. I'm not super ghostly about it,
uh-huh.
but it still is like kind of just a thing I don't really do. But after hearing all the stories that we have, it's kind of one of those things in my mind where if something's going to haunt you and make its presence known, that cover doesn't make a difference. There's plenty of times people are under the covers just fine, and it's letting you know it's there.
You just don't want something reaching up and getting your foot.
Yeah, that's yeah. I don't like that.
No.
No. Thank you for the story. We do appreciate that. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Kits in England sent over an audio file. Let's hear you, Kits.
Hello, my name's Kit. I'm from England. I'm 23 years old, and I'm a proud EPP. And I'm fascinated and truly inspired by your podcast. So thank you very much to Tony and Jenny Bruski for creating this fantastic show that I've become thoroughly addicted to. My story is about my life of mental illness and emotional instability of a disturbing nature that all started in my childhood home. My childhood home was an ominous and cold Victorian house and garden with a hostile ambience and an atmosphere. At the age of 4, it all began. I would awake every night screaming, adrenaline coursing through my brain, hallucinating and in pure terror, as if something just injected me with pure fear. And this would happen almost every night, and I was really tormented. My poor parents, an older brother, who was 4 years older than me and slept in the room next door to mine, would rush into my room in complete confusion and panic. This would be in the early hours of the morning. They'd come in, they'd shake me out of my bed, because I'd be in pure shock, and try and find out what on earth was going on. At such an early age, this fear gripped me so badly that I just laid in my bed screaming to the point where I couldn't breathe. My dad used to hold me on my bed with his hand over my mouth to shut me up. It was that bad. It was as if I was having some kind of extreme seizure. These episodes have followed me all my life, but I always reminisce and think back to where they began, because it always surrounds this house and this room in this house. But I'll get to that later on, because I need to take it step by step. Of course, my parents took me straight to the doctors and asked them what on earth they could do about it and what was going on. And they first said that it was night terrors, and as I was so young, they would try to pacify me. But I specifically remember being quite offended when I turned to the doctor and asked him what the scientific name for it was, and he made up some silly childish name as if to pacify me and tell me not to worry, and my reaction was quite offended that he would insult my intelligence. As I would have these night terrors, my mother would carry me around the house very nicely, and she would take me through each room, telling me to breathe and telling me there's nothing wrong, and we'd look for each room in the house as if we were looking for a monster. You know, there's nothing here, nothing to worry about. Soon we'll calm down and we'll go back to sleep. And I still, you know, God bless her now for being so patient, because what happened next was just terrible. When I was 7 years old, I was lying in my bed trying to go to sleep because I had school the next day and my parents were downstairs watching television. My brother, being next door and being 4 years older than me, would quite often tease me and taunt me. And he'd knock on the wall, scratch on the wall, try and distract me. Even sometimes he'd sneak in my room with a hand puppet and try to scare me. And it bloody well worked, I can tell you. On this occasion, it wasn't him that scared me. I was lying in bed, and I heard a loud and very aggressive animalistic growl. And it sounded like it was right behind my head, in the corner of the room, right up the wall. And of course my immediate reaction was I expected it to be my brother, and I called out saying, leave me alone, go away, stop bullying me. I even called down to my parents and said, he's doing it again, I'm trying to get to sleep, you know, complaining. And then my father called up and said, your brother's not here, calm down, go to sleep. And immediately I realised he's not there, he's out, he's away with his friends playing football that night. And I was terrified. I couldn't sleep. I thought, well, what on earth was that growl? I didn't hear anything audible ever since then, but it seemed to be a real milestone for what would happen next and how my life would change, and me, how I changed. That's the more specific point. I would wake up in this room, not every night, but at this age it was a good 2 to 3 times a week, and I was getting older. 7 years old, 8 years old. I was already desensitized to this pure fear, I'd never enjoyed it and still don't now when it happens, but I would wake up, get out of bed, and simply walk around the house on my own, going through the same routine my mother taught me as a child when she used to carry me. But the trouble is, I was still a child, acting like a man. I'd walk around the house, and I'd start to notice that the house almost seemed to be breathing, and it was like it was playing a game on me of like hide and seek. Every room had a different vibration, different atmosphere. And as I walked down the stairs, the two rooms at the bottom were pitch black. No light would ever penetrate them. And walking through them, I used to run. They were freezing cold. There was nothing different about them. One was a dining room, one was a living room, or a lounge, or a sitting room. But they just seemed to be so dark, you know, in this old house. Where it would always end, funny enough, was the kitchen. I'd get to the kitchen, and quite often I'd find a real sanctuary there. And that wasn't part of the original house. The kitchen was an extension built upon the house. It wasn't part of the original Victorian structure. So that's quite interesting. I started to become extremely depressed. I had terrible thoughts. When I was in school, I used to imagine disgusting things, mutilating people, murder, horrible things. I won't go on. I was very depressed, I was disturbed mentally. I was in a Christian school as well, and in this Christian school they would make us say prayers at lunchtime and sing hymns, and I would bloody well refuse. I would never do it, and I was quite strong to rebel against this, you know, 8 years old, and I'm there refusing to pray because I said I hate God. You know, it's just a bit strange really how quickly I was altered from this scared child to this rebellious, horrible character. I was never a hot topic in school anyway, and that carries on through my teenage years. You know, I would never really turn up on time, as I'd spend all night walking around my house, terrified, having these horrible episodes. And I was always very different, you know, from a very early age. When I was 13 years old, on my 13th birthday, my mother still swears to this day it was like I turned into a monster. She would come into my room sometimes when I wasn't at school or anything else and wake me up and say good morning, and on this occasion she was quite proud to walk into my room with presents in hand and say happy birthday, Kit. And she said that it was like someone that took her son away and replaced him with this disgusting, horrible, spiteful monster. And I was horrible. I would wish evil upon anyone. I was constantly cursing people and wanting to hurt them. I would lash out randomly at people. When I was in the car, I would constantly try and make a fuss and argue. And quite often it would end up in me just trying to smash the car up from the inside. I was a horrible, violent, little, bloody, horrible hooligan. And this only got worse as I grew up. But what happened then? My parents split up. My brother and my father moved out of the Victorian house and into a cottage nearby. So I moved out of a little room. My poor mum was left with me, the state I was in, self-harming, cutting myself, vandalising the house, smashing up cars around the neighbourhood, being chased by police all over the shop. Very nasty young man. Piece of shit, if I'm honest. And I moved into my brother's empty room. And lo and behold, the episodes temporarily stopped. I would no longer awake in the night, feeling like the house was making me play its game and chasing me through each room as it made me feel different fear and depth perception, hallucinations, walls closing in, wind rushing in my ears. Panic, you know, I didn't have it anymore. I was free to feel normal, briefly. But I still carried on developing worse and worse into this horrible thing. I had a fascination with violence, with murder, and my parents were very worried about me. And looking back, I can understand why. Now I'm okay. I'm doing pretty well. You know, I'm working in Cyprus at the moment in a big 5-star hotel as a chef. I'm really pushing hard for my career, and all I do is work on my career and stay healthy. And what motivates me is I feel like I need to redeem myself after all the nasty things I used to do. But what I honestly think happened was something was in that room, something was in that house, and it definitely got inside me and shook me up big time, because I changed from this innocent child who was, you know, I think I was quite clever for my age, but quite smart for my age, and I was very innocent, and it took advantage of that and turned me into this horrible little bastard. And it could have gone worse. I definitely think it could have gone worse, but it wasn't natural, that's for sure. So that's my story so far. It carries on. I'll be more than happy to call back and follow it on from there through my teenage years, and where I started to get more mentally ill, and to the point where I was borderline schizophrenic when I was 16. But we'll save that for later. So that's my story, the beginning of my story. Kit from England, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. I hope you put this on the show. I'd love to hear it, as embarrassing as it would be to hear my own voice. But it really is thanks to your show that I've had the courage to look back and think, you know, was all this a possession? Was it a poltergeist? Was it a dark spirit? Who knows? Maybe some of your listeners can help me with this, or even debunk it. Maybe that would help. Thank you.
I think, honestly, that sometimes they're able to pick up on the slightest amount of sadness or little bit of depression or whatever we have,
mm-hmm.
and then prey upon it, which amplifies it so much.
Sure. So not to say that it's 100% this or 100% that, but it's a combination.
Yeah.
That ends up getting amplified, essentially, and much worse than it would be if you didn't have point B, the paranormal side, affecting point A,
mm-hmm.
the other side of things.
Right, because once he moved out of that bedroom, mm-hmm. things seemed to get better.
Yeah.
He still had lifelong, or has had lifelong,
sure.
you know, struggles here and there. But it sounds like it, whatever was in that room just amplified it and took over.
Sure.
And made him act out.
And then when you go through that, it's not necessarily something that's easy just to flip the switch off of.
No.
You know, after being essentially traumatized by that for so many years,
mm-hmm.
then trying to find a way to move past it. So, Kit, thank you for calling in and sharing your experiences with us. We do greatly, greatly appreciate that. And it's always interesting to hear where folks are listening to us at. Let's go to Eric in New Jersey. Hi, Eric.
What's up, Brewskis? It's Eric calling again from good old Dirty Jersey. So I just posted a picture on your Facebook page. Last night, some friends and I went to investigate Letchworth Village in Rockland County. I had never been there before. My two friends that I attended with have gone there before and investigated. My one friend believes to be an empath, and she had been scratched there prior to going back again last night. Well, we went back last night. There's many buildings there. The first building we went into, as soon as we walked in, there was flies everywhere. We heard footsteps. We heard noises. We were experiencing cold spots. The first building we walked into, which is what welcomed us, said, "Hey guys, yeah, this place is fucking haunted." Started walking around, took some photos, started walking through some of the other buildings. When we had left and we were reviewing the photos, we were shocked at what we saw. I posted it on your Facebook page. You guys be the judge. I don't know if it's a ghost or a demon, but it's definitely some sort of spirit standing in that room. We're going to go back and investigate some more. We're actually booked to go investigate the Hinsdale House on October 22nd. I'd love to talk to you guys. I have many stories. As you know, I went to Ed and Lorraine's Occult Museum over the weekend. It was absolutely amazing. I've got some great stories about that. Tony Spear is a great guy. It was an overall great experience. But back to Letchworth, I couldn't believe how quick the activity started. Literally, as soon as we walked into the first building, I mean, it was just happening. I mean, voices, footsteps, things moving. I mean, it was pretty mind-blowing. I'd love for you guys to share this on your show. I love your show. I listen to it every night when I'm at work. You guys are amazing. Feel free to play this on your show, and I'd really love to hear your feedback about that photo. So you guys have a great day or night, and talk to you soon, Brewskis. Have a good one.
Have you seen the photo?
No, I'm not sure when exactly it was posted.
We get a lot of photos posted to our Facebook page, so when someone references it, sometimes I really have to try and figure out exactly which one it was, but if anyone else wants to respond to that, and I'm going to try and get on there too. I'm scanning it right now, and I'm not coming across it. I'm sure it's up there, though, somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to investigate a little bit more and take a look, that would be where to do an op on our Facebook page. So I'm just checking it out now. The gags, the clown, by the way, turned out to be exactly what we had heard rumors of it being. It's something to do with some sort of movie that's being shot, some independent type film that we were talking about the other day. But I guess they looked into all the laws and everything to make sure they weren't violating anything. And it's completely legal to wander around Green Bay dressed as a psychotic-looking clown with black balloons.
If you had run into that in the middle of the night, you would have screamed and ran away.
Probably.
Yeah.
And probably very high-pitched. People would have thought it was a pack of raccoons mating. That's how loud it would have been.
Yeah.
Not just two, a pack. That's how loud that scream would have been.
Okay. Good to know.
just thought I'd share. That's all. So okay. Anyway, creepy stuff. I'd love to see that fine film when it is completed. So that wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, please become an EPP. Support it. Keep us on the air. It's only $5 a month to do so, and you get all those bonus episodes, more than 100 of them, exclusive video, and more. Ghost Podcast is where you do that at. GhostPodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thank you guys for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.